This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Thursday, the 15th of March. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Daniel Roberts. Tonight on the show, we hear about Victoria's measles alert. After two people travelling home have come down with symptoms, there is concern that the infectious viral disease could spread. And we are asking Victorians to be aware of measles symptoms and what to do if you are concerned. We also head to the Northern Territory, who have lined up with the rest of the nation when it comes to adoption equality, passing a bill this week that allows same-sex couples to adopt.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
Now that marriage equality has passed nationally, it is time for other laws to get in line as well. And when it comes to same-sex couples being able to adopt, that is now the case. This week, the Northern Territory, the Adoption of Children Legislation Amendment Equality passed, allowing same-sex couples to be able to adopt and take another step closer to bringing families together legally under the law. Dean Arcuri spoke to the Human Rights Law Centre's Lee Carney about what this change in the law means.
Before this week, we had adoption equality in every other state and territory across Australia. Western Australia took the lead back in 2002, and it's taken 16 years until the Northern Territory passed their bill just this week.
Last year in November, Australia's first openly gay Indigenous Member of Parliament urged the Northern Territory government to legalise adoption for same-sex couples. Government backbencher Chancey Payich told the Northern Territory Parliament he was hoping to raise a family in Alice Springs. And as of this week, that is something that is a reality. This week, new adoption equality laws allowing same-sex couples to adopt children passed in the Northern Territory Parliament. The Northern Territory was the only remaining Australian state or territory that prevented same-sex couples and unmarried couples from adopting children, with couples previously required to be married for 2 years before they could adopt, and until recently, equal marriage was something that was off the table, so they couldn't even do that.
So you needed to be married for 2 years, and obviously because we didn't have marriage equality, it immediately excluded anyone who couldn't get married. And so if you're a same-sex couple, you weren't allowed to get married under federal law, which meant that you couldn't adopt.
Wait, so if you needed to be married for 2 years, why did the law need to change? We have marriage equality now, so wouldn't it be simpler to just have same-sex couples wait 2 years after they're legally married, or even just create a fast-track system for couples who are already in a position to adopt? Why the need for a change this way?
There still needed to be other amendments because even though we talked about married couples, it was still only about married couples who were a man and a woman. So if you were a man and a woman but you were in a de facto relationship before this, you also couldn't adopt. So they've changed that as well. But they've also made it so that you don't have to be married. But if you are married, it doesn't matter if you're a different sex couple or a same-sex couple. If you are two loving parents and you want to raise children, adopt children, including children who have been in your care for a number of years, then now the Northern Territory says that that is what's most important, that children are growing up in loving and safe homes. What was really fantastic about the Adoption Equality Bill in the Northern Territory is that every single government MP and coalition MP voted for it. There was only one holdout, which was one independent, who couldn't quite get behind it. But it is really fantastic to see such strong support in the Northern Territory for this long overdue reform.
But the adoption of children legislation amendment, equality bill that passed through the Territory's House of Parliament this week, is only about couples being able to adopt. A single member of the GLBTIQA plus community is still unable to.
There are exceptional circumstances in which a single person can adopt, but the Northern Territory went a little bit differently from the other states and territories where there aren't those restrictions. There's a bit of a different landscape in the Northern Territory. When you look at the kind of the kids who are being adopted there, there's really strong concerns about ensuring that children from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander backgrounds are raised with people who understand their cultural backgrounds and within families that, you know, within the community and kind of related to them. So they had other concerns there, I think, that led to them adopting a slightly different approach when it came to individual parents.
So what were some of the barriers that couples previously faced before this week where the Northern Territory fell in line with the rest of the nation when it came to same-sex couples being able to adopt?
So they would be raising kids, but they would be kind of be seen as temporary carers, I suppose. So this didn't provide, you know, them or the kids that they were raising with the certainty of knowing that this was the family that they were going to be able to stay with till they turned 18. And, you know, indeed, even after 18, that this is the family that they would have for the rest of their life who would be able to care for them. So it does make a difference to lots of families to know that, you know, there is that certainty of that adoption brings. And everyone kind of understands and knows what adoption is. When it comes to foster care isn't meant as a permanent arrangement where, you know, parents are foster carers for 12 or 13 years. People understand that when a child is adopted, then, you know, the parents should have a say in the parenting and the decisions of the child in going to school and, you know, going to the doctor and all of these things that make sense, I think. But it's really fantastic to see that the Northern Territory has passed adoption equality, and it will make a really significant difference for these kids already being raised in loving homes.
Wow. It really does make you realise and appreciate how much we actually fought for last year during the postal survey that brought so much harm but is now bringing so much joy. Why this has been in the works for years with advocates campaigning. This bill is a part of the knock-off effect that marriage equality has created for our legal system, opening up a whole new landscape to what it means to not only be a loving same-sex couple, but a family as well.
Now that we have marriage equality, now that we had such a strong, resounding yes vote, this has been a clear message to decision makers in every state and territory that really our laws are out of step and they need to be updated to be in line with our modern community values, which say that really what matters is that we have happy, loving families and that our laws recognise them. There are already same-sex couples in the Northern Territory who have been amazing parents to children, you know, in foster care situations and permanent care situations, kids who want to be recognised as part of their family, want to be adopted and, you know, to have their parents recognised and to have, you know, all of the kind of ease of not having to face the legal and administrative barriers that faces, but the laws in the Northern Territory didn't allow that to happen. So it's really fantastic that we now have marriage equality, and now we can say that Australia has adoption equality, which is something that has been a fight for many, many decades. We still don't have equality in some other areas of the law, and obviously we'll keep working towards that, particularly when it comes to parenting and, you know, equal recognition of parenting. But this is one thing that we can tick off the list and say that, you know, it's fantastic that kids can be equally adopted by different sex parents and same-sex parents all across the country.
As well as removing discrimination in adoption laws, the Gunner government has also committed to dealing with the legacy of the criminal convictions for homosexual offences.
Currently, there are lots of people who are living in the Northern Territory who lived in the territory when they had laws which criminalised homosexuality, as existed in every other state and territory across Australia. But the Northern Territory doesn't have a scheme for people who have these leftover criminal convictions from before homosexuality was decriminalised, still on their criminal records today. And this has a really significant effect on them if they want to apply for a visa overseas, if they want to volunteer, you know, with older people or with children, if they're applying for jobs. And so they've committed to introducing a scheme that would allow people to remove these leftover records from these unjust laws that exist in the Northern Territory. It would make actually the Northern Territory the final jurisdiction in Australia to introduce a bill like that. Currently, we already have schemes in the ACT, New South Wales and Victoria. Legislation has been passed in Queensland and Tasmania, and they're in the process of implementing their schemes at the moment. And there's a bill currently in the Western Australian lower house that's been passed in the lower house and has gone up to the upper house. So it's really just the Northern Territory to go in redressing some of the harms that these, you know, historic laws caused for so many decades.
We have many advocates who have been working behind the scenes and in front of the scenes for many years to push for our rights. And finally, we're in a place to push and keep pushing and demand legal equality for all in Australia on every level.
A lot of these have been decades and decades of advocacy and work, but what the Yes outcome really gave us was this really strong message from ordinary Australians that they believe in fairness and equality, and it just makes so much more of a difference when we can go to decision makers and we can say, you know, a majority of people in your electorates that vote for you, that you represent, think that, you know, denying people who love each other the ability to marry the person that they love, they think that's fundamentally unfair and they want that law to change. What they want is for LGBTI Australians to be treated equally and fairly, and you have these other laws that treat them unfairly in other ways. And we know now, because we have marriage equality and we've seen that strong support for our community, that these are laws that are out of step with what, you know, the Australian community expects of you as decision makers. And we want you to change these laws to reflect the fact that all loving parents should be recognised, that families should be recognised. And there's obviously a lot more that needs to be done as well to ensure that trans people can access legal recognition of who they are without having to step through unnecessary legal administrative hurdles, and also to protect intersex people from medically unnecessary surgeries that seek to normalise them. So there's lots that has been done, but this has really given us some more momentum, I think, with governments to advocate for progressive change.
That was Dean Arcuri speaking to Lee Carney from the Human Rights Law Centre.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Victoria is on measles alert as of last week. Many people have been exposed to the virus between Saturday, March 3rd and Wednesday, March 7 in a large number of city and rural locations. Dean Arcuri spoke to Deputy Chief Health Officer Dr. Brett Sutton about the alert and why people need to be vaccinated.
Measles is a highly infectious viral disease that can cause serious illness, particularly in very young children and adults. People can develop pneumonia and other serious complications from the disease and often need to be hospitalised. As of last week, Victoria is on a measles alert, with concerns that many people may have been exposed to the virus between Saturday, March 3rd and Wednesday, March 7th in a large number of city and rural locations. With one instance involving the Melbourne CBD, local tourist attractions and travelling down the Great Ocean Road, and another from a flight to Kuala Lumpur into Melbourne on AirAsia flight D7214, the Department of Health and Human Services has begun to alert people of symptoms to prevent the spread of measles. Deputy Chief Health Officer Dr. Brett Sutton explains.
There are two adults who've both travelled internationally and come into Melbourne in recent weeks. One case was infectious March 3 to 6, and another case was infectious and was at Tullamarine Airport on March the 7th. So the first case, we provided details about a long list of places that they'd been, but it included a backpackers and in Melbourne CBD and some places in St Kilda, but then a long trip down the Great Ocean Road. We've done a lot of chasing up of those individuals, but obviously we're just still trying to get the message out that if people can review that list in those days, if they haven't had a vaccine against measles, if they know they haven't had one, or if they aren't sure, they need to be aware of the symptoms of measles that might arise.
The illness usually begins with common cold symptoms such as a runny nose, red eyes and a cough, followed by a fever and a rash. From Saturday, March 3rd until Wednesday, March 7th, the locations include the Flinders Street Backpackers at Elizabeth Street, Flinders Street Station, St Kilda Beach and tram route 16 and 96 to and from St Kilda Beach. The McDonald's on Elizabeth Street and Coles Central at the corner of Flinders and Elizabeth, Phillip Island, Nobby's Visitor Centre Cafe, and the Westpac Bank in Elizabeth Street and the Medicare office in Bourke Street. Multiple sites along the Great Ocean Road are also included between Geelong and Warrnambool. Measles have an incubation period of up to 18 days, so those at risk of measles who visited any of these locations might show symptoms up until March 21st.
It's a super infectious virus, really the most infectious virus there is, and it means that anyone who's not immunised and comes within cooee of someone who's got measles is really at risk of contracting it. For a lot of people, it can be a significant illness, so a third of kids need to be hospitalised, and a lot of adults get hospitalised as well, and you can get a significant pneumonia as a complication of measles, and, you know, there are some rare but very serious consequences as well, including inflammation of the brain, and, you know, 1 in 1,000, 1 in 2,000 people in developed countries will die from measles.
The characteristic measles rash usually begins 3 to 7 days after the first symptoms. Anyone developing symptoms is advised to ring ahead to their general practitioner or hospital first and tell them that they may have measles so that appropriate steps can be taken to avoid contact with other patients.
Look, it really applies to anyone who's not immunised. Our vaccination coverage for kids under 5 or 5 and below is excellent, so we don't see a lot of cases in children at all because of that high vaccination coverage. But for people from their mid-20s really to early 50s might not have received a vaccine as a child, or they might have only had one vaccine, whereas kids coming through now will get 2 doses, and one vaccine doesn't give you as much protection. So really, for people 26 to 52, we especially try and let them know that they're potentially vulnerable to contracting measles because they're not fully protected.
The disease is now uncommon in Australia because of the widespread use of the measles vaccine. It's important to continue immunising children because of the risk that infection can be brought in by travellers arriving from overseas. The measles vaccine is currently recommended on the National Immunisation Program at 12 months and again at 18 months. Immunisation is the best protection against measles.
If we're in our 20s, 30s, 40s, we should kind of assume that we probably only got one and may have got none. For a lot of women who get tested during pregnancy, they'll find out their status. But if you're unsure, there are two things you can do. If you want to avoid a vaccination that's unnecessary, you could go and get tested to see if you're immune. But really, there is absolutely no harm, especially if you've only had one dose, to get a second dose, because that will give you the reassurance of lifetime protection. So you can just go and get an MMR shot and be happy that you're protected against measles and mumps and rubella, for that matter, for life.
As I was discussing this with Dr. Sutton, it dawned on me that I don't remember the last time I got vaccinated against measles. Was it when I was at school? Did I get vaccinated while I was at work? You know, how is this something I can't remember? Is there a record somewhere of all of my immunizations? If I'm this concerned, is there a problem with me getting another vaccination?
They're relatively rare occurrences in Australia, but because of that infectiousness and because of the seriousness of the illness, we do put out these calls for people to have an awareness of it. We get a few dozen cases each year. They're all related to international travel in one way or another. But we like people to be aware, because we certainly wouldn't want someone walking about not knowing that they might have measles and going to a GP or emergency department or on crowded public transport where they're spreading to a whole bunch of other vulnerable people, and we end up with a whole sequence of cases. We often get on top of it because we can chase individuals up, but we do need the kind of awareness of symptoms and awareness of the fact that there's been a recent case for people to make sure that they're presenting and protecting others by calling ahead to their GP or ED and getting a mask put on themselves before they go into the waiting room.
Most people over the age of 52 will have been exposed to measles in their childhood and therefore will be protected. And with only 2 other cases detected, is this really something we need to be concerned about?
Yeah, I think especially for the first case, because that individual did walk around for 3 days without an awareness of measles, and, you know, backpackers will have a lot of people in that vulnerable age group. For the plane, we do have some mechanisms, obviously, to try and contact them all individually. When we get a passenger list, we can email them en masse and hopefully let them know that they might be presenting with symptoms. But certainly for that first case, for all of the Great Ocean Road and Melbourne CBD and St Kilda, you know, there are a lot of potentially exposed individuals, and a number of those, I think, will be vulnerable to measles and are therefore, you know, at risk of developing it, and we need them to be aware that it might be measles.
But where these 2 cases of measles are concerned involve the Melbourne CBD and the airport. Is that why we're on alert? Because there's a possibility that many people could be developing symptoms? Or is it just precautionary? With a backpackers, airport and tourist destination involved, what does this mean for people holidaying in Australia? Can they get a measles vaccine?
They are too late to be protected from measles if they've been exposed on those dates. but they may still be presenting with symptoms of measles from now, really, for the next week. So, you know, it's worthwhile if they miss out on measles this time to think about getting immunised down the track, and you can pick it up at your GP anywhere in Victoria. It's not a free vaccine, so you'll have to pay for it, but it's one of those things that really needs to be considered like a travel vaccine. It'll protect you here, it'll protect you in a lot of places regionally that are, you know, at much higher risk of measles, and this is what's happened with these two cases that some individuals have come through Southeast Asia, and lots of measles circulating there normally. So for that holiday to Bali, holiday to Thailand or the Philippines, you need to think about measles vaccine as a travel vaccine.
Remember, measles is a very contagious illness that causes a skin rash and a fever. Measles can cause serious, sometimes fatal complications, including pneumonia and encephalitis. Measles is rare in Australia because of the widespread use of the measles vaccine, but vaccination is important because people keep coming from overseas and carrying the virus. Remember, immunisation is the best protection against measles.
That was Dean Arcuri speaking to Victoria's Deputy Chief Health Officer, Dr. Brett Sutton, regarding being on a measles alert. Places you can get help if you think you are showing symptoms are your doctor or an emergency department. We have a link to all this information on our social media, or check out betterhealth.vic.gov.au.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Olympic figure skater Adam Rippon, who became the first openly gay athlete to compete for the United States in the Winter Olympics, has delivered a powerful speech about coming out and self-acceptance after receiving the Human Rights Campaign's Visibility Award. In his speech, he discussed how he was afraid that he wouldn't be welcomed by the LGBTQ community because someone like him maybe wouldn't be the role model the community was looking for. This is part of his speech.
When I was little, I used to care so much about what others thought of me. I was mindful of the way I dressed, my mannerisms, the way I talked. I was afraid people would think I was weak. I was afraid of making mistakes. I was afraid that I wouldn't be welcomed by the LGBTQ community because someone like me wouldn't be the role model they were looking for. Maybe I was too gay, and maybe I was just too myself. Throughout my life, I have fallen short many times. I have felt depressed, I felt not good enough, and I felt like there would never be a day where I would feel like I belong. I was living life afraid. I remember hearing the quote, "What would you do if you weren't afraid?" I remember really hearing it and honestly asking myself, "What would I do differently?" I remember making the choice to be unafraid. I made the choice to not care what others thought of who I was. I was going to be truly me. This was the biggest and most important decision I've ever made. To live fearlessly. To take risks. To let go of my fear of what others may think of me, and to always keep learning. You will find that you will have your greatest success when you wear your scars proudly. Don't be afraid to try something new. If you make a mistake, learn from it. There's no shame in not being perfect. Nobody's perfect. I mean, I'm not, like, far off. But I digress. That's a joke, by the way. Through my shortcomings and from my successes, I've learned that a champion is more than a medal. It's a mindset. Being a champion is being a role model. I've learned that you can be a role model by just being yourself and living your best life. In the past few weeks, I have been shocked at the amount of people who have shared with me that they still struggle being themselves. In this crazy and sometimes scary time we live in, it's so important that we listen to each other with an open heart and open mind. You can change someone's mind by sharing your story. You can make someone stay by getting them to laugh. But we can change someone's life by showing them compassion. I will never forget the compassion others have shown me. Their generosity helped shape my world. There will be people you meet in your life who may not like you for who you are, and they may not like what you have to say. There might be people who come into your life just to tell you that they hope you fail. Be kind to them. They see something in you that they wish they had.
This got us at the Informer thinking. Were any of you freaked out because you wouldn't be accepted or welcomed by the LGBTIQ community before you came out of the closet? Or maybe do you feel this way now? If so, we want to hear from you, because our diversity is our strength and our inclusivity is what makes us a stronger, more accepting community. We aren't just a voice for the parts of our community that speak the loudest or the longest. We all have something to say. If you would like to share who you are or how you feel with us here on The Informer, then get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au or via Facebook or Twitter, and help us show how our differences make us a stronger community.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs from Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you would like to share with us, do get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Daniel Roberts.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.